This is KVNF's regional newscast for Monday, July 26th. I'm Gavin Dahl. Mesa Valley School District 51 announced masks will not be required for students or staff when school starts back up. The CDPHE has adopted a guidance model rather than statewide requirements, putting decisions about the next stage of the pandemic in the hands of local governments and schools. Mesa is a high-risk county thanks to the Delta variant of the coronavirus and low vaccination rates. Last week, there were 680 new COVID cases confirmed. The state's Air Pollution Control Division withdrew a proposed employee traffic reduction program modeled after similar initiatives launched in other local and state jurisdictions across the country. The program would have required businesses with more than 100 employees at one location in the Denver metro area to develop and implement plans to reduce the number of employees commuting in single occupancy vehicles. Newsline reports instead the program will be replaced with voluntary initiatives. Transportation is Colorado's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, accounting for over 25 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year. Two former Indian boarding schools in Colorado will be investigated for remains of Native children who attended them. The Denver Post reports the Fort Lewis College Hesperus campus and the defunct Teller Indian School in Grand Junction both operated from the late 1800s to 1911. Students were known to have died there, and their bodies were reportedly never returned to tribes. During a news conference in Denver last week, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland said the federal government will assist local communities with identifying every former federal boarding school in the country and investigating the potential for unmarked graves. Haaland was also in Grand Junction Friday to visit the new BLM headquarters, where only 3 out of 320 workers relocated from D.C. during the Trump presidency. The AP reports the Bureau of Land Management has around 10,000 employees, most working out of field offices around the West. Then Saturday near Ridgeway, Haaland heard from local stakeholders who helped write the CORE Act, proposed legislation that would protect about 400,000 acres of public lands in Colorado. KBUT's Christopher Biddle attended that outdoor discussion and shared this report.
As a member of Congress, Deb Haaland supported the CORE Act, and now in her position with the Biden administration, she says she still supports it.
The CORE Act is a model for outdoor recreation work that's envisioned in the President's America the Beautiful initiative. At Interior, we recognize efforts are best when they're locally led and locally designed.
Haaland spoke to about 20 local stakeholders outside at the top of the Pines Nature Preserve, a cloud-covered Mount Sneffels behind her. She was flanked by Colorado Senators John Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett. Bennett is sponsoring the bill in the Senate. The CORE Act aims to protect land from oil and gas development and promote the outdoor recreation economy. It's passed the House several times, including this session. Many have high hopes for it to finally pass the Senate in 2021. For KBUT News, I'm Christopher Biddle.
The BLM starts an emergency wild horse gather today on the West Douglas Herd area, located about 20 miles south of Rangeley. The Grand Junction Sentinel reports the plan is to remove the entire population of about 450 wild horses from state and private land. Extreme drought conditions have limited food and water resources, and the Oil Springs fire burned critical summer habitat. The operation is expected to last about 3 weeks. For many, this summer has been about getting back to pre-pandemic life with activities like cookouts and vacations. But it's not that simple for those with compromised immune systems, and the region's low vaccination rates aren't helping them either. Mountain West News Bureau's Maggie Mullen reports.
The day that Kate Sherrod got vaccinated against COVID-19 was an emotional one.
Because it was my first time around strangers in like a year.
Sherrod is immunocompromised, which limits her ability to fight off infections. So she was stuck at home during the first year of the pandemic. It also meant she was in one of the early priority groups for the vaccine. And after the first shot in March, Sherrod let herself imagine some of the things she'd do once she hit full immunity.
And I had been looking forward to going to the symphony. There's a great record store here in town that I've never been to. You know, there's an Expedition League baseball team here. I mean, all sorts of things.
Sherrod lives in Casper, Wyoming. And when she started to reemerge after her second shot, it wasn't as safe as she had hoped.
I noticed that even before vaccinations were available to the general public, I was seeing people that were acting like it was all over.
She saw very few people wearing masks, and only about 33% of her community have gotten vaccinated, which means Sherrod can't depend on herd immunity for protection.
It's infuriating because there are perfectly ordinary things I could be doing safely still if other people were even remotely considerate.
With a few exceptions, a lot of the region's vaccination rates hover around 40%. That makes life difficult for people with an autoimmune disease, like Sherrod. The drugs she takes for it mean that her immune system may not do its job when it encounters the vaccine. Evan Crump is a pharmacist in Laramie.
The way, you know, a traditional vaccine works, it has a little bit of that disease and it goes into the body, and so a healthy immune system sees that foreign object and starts to build antibodies towards them to fight that off to protect our body.
It's a little different with mRNA vaccines like the Moderna or Pfizer. Crump says here's one way to think about it.
They kind of, instead of bringing a bit of the disease in, they bring in a picture of what the immune system needs to watch out for. The body learns that and then starts to make antibodies.
But if your immune system isn't working properly, you may not develop those antibodies. This is potentially the case for at least 10 million Americans who have a compromised immune system, like people with organ transplants, cancer patients, and those living with HIV.
There's so many other, you know, disease states out there where maybe they get some response, but they're not getting full response from the COVID vaccine, and they're so vulnerable.
According to AARP, most doctors treating patients with these conditions are still recommending they get a coronavirus vaccine, since some protection is better than none. Mei Chu is with the Colorado School of Public Health. She says after getting vaccinated, that part of the population may want to take other precautions, like staying home and masking up when you leave. As for those with healthy immune systems, Chu says they can help too by getting vaccinated.
We have personal responsibility to make sure they're safe.
Kate Sherrod would like to see more of her community get vaccinated, but she's not counting on it.
There's a lot of people out there like me. This question is hanging over our heads. Did the vaccine help, or was it a false hope? And we're not going to know until some research is done.
Currently, researchers at Johns Hopkins Medicine and NYU Langone Health are studying the vaccine responses of patients with suppressed immune systems. In the meantime, she's finding ways to soak up summer while staying safe, like picnics on Casper Mountain with her sister and tending to her vegetable garden. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Maggie Mullen.
That does it for Monday's KVNF Regional Newscast. If you have story ideas or feedback, email news@kvnf.org. Special thanks to Kate Redmond. I'm Gavin Dahl.